This is an unbelievable call. This is like going for the onside kick against Peyton Manning because you don't want him to get the ball too many times. You don't think you can hold him out. And here we go. This could decide the game.
Fourth and goal. Uh-oh. And they're going to snap it. And it's Trey Burton who throws caught. Foles, touchdown. How do you figure?
David. Football. Football David.
The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on Apple Podcasts and at NFL.com/DDFP. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Don't know if you heard the news. Number 9, no longer in dark green. Now he's in teal green. Is that what teal is green? Or is it its own thing? Kind of like chili isn't exactly a soup. It's its own thing. Either way, that's what Nick Foles is going to be wearing in 2019. Hi and hello and welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. I hope all's well wherever you are here in Studio 66. You know what? We finished last week by having a Philadelphia area guy named Ross Tucker in, and great reviews on that as always when Ross Tucker stops by. Big fun there. Go back and listen to that one. Today, another Philadelphia icon. One half of the first couple of Philadelphia, seated to my immediate left, the mister to the great Colleen Wolf, John Gonzalez from The Ringer and beyond. What's the poop, fella?
My man, first time without my significant other on your show.
Is that true?
Yeah. No. I don't think I've done it solo.
I'm pretty sure you have.
It's always the Wolf couple. I'll take Mr. Wolf.
So
Mrs. Wolf is
let's start here. Mm-hmm. You make your way in the world. You keep an eye on all sports, of course. Well, not every sport. You know, people say, like, I like all sports, but do you like all sports?
I don't.
You don't. You don't like hockey?
No, I'm out on hockey.
You baseball?
It feels good to say that. I got a lot of heat in Philadelphia for saying that because, like, you're required constitutionally to like the Flyers in all four sports.
It is kind of like the hipster thing. If you're a sport, if you're a self-proclaimed sports fan, you have to, like, the hipster move is to be like, oh yeah, my favorite team is the local hockey team, right? Spaghetti? Isn't that like the cools like hockey, right?
Yeah, I think so. But I also think, in a sense, if the Flyers were really, really, really good, there would be kind of like that fever would like trickle in. You'd be like, oh, this is cool to go along with it. It doesn't work for you?
I've covered the Stanley Cup, and they made me. It wasn't something that I felt super excited about.
It is.
This is a confession. I didn't understand.
Well, your thing is
basketball. Be a therapy session.
We'll talk about that. We'll talk some pro football. But I will say about hockey, it does feel like a weird contrivance. If you're, I always resent when people say, people who don't care about sports, as a, for instance, basketball.
Sure.
When they deconstruct things to make their point, like, everybody cares so much. It's just a bunch of guys and tall guys running back and forth, throwing a circle through another circle. Like, yeah, if you get into that deconstructionist kind of logic, you can do that to anything. Like, you know, what are bikes? You know, they're just like metal, but like with wheels attached. And that's how you get around. Yeah. Pizza. Like, what's pizza? Really? It's just some bread and some cheese. And that's good.
You've thought a lot about this, and I appreciate that. I'm for people liking whatever they like. It's just that for me, hockey's not really my bag. But if it's your bag,
but it is a weird contrivance, though, that it's like, yes, do the thing. Like, the goal is to score goals, to put the circle thing into the rectangle with a stick. Oh, also, do it on skates.
That part is hyper impressive.
It is impressive.
I can't skate at all. My wife, as you know, an accomplished figure skater at one point in her life, and has taken me out skating and would terrorize me by like dragging me around like a small child and doing twists and turns and things. And it's not really for me. I'd rather
emasculating or no? You're cool with it.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I mean, there's plenty of other reasons I've been emasculated. You just throw that on the pile.
So you do writing and you do podcasting over there at The Ringer.
You do.
Your boss is Bill Simmons, correct?
He is. That's your guy.
He's my guy?
You guys are tight. You have sleepovers. You make forts with the couch cushions.
As Simmons will tell you, we're natural enemies in the wild.
Well, just in the fantasy league, I thought.
Well, I mean, of course, that bleeds into pro football.
Did you win this year?
No, I did not win. Oh. No, I won last year.
Okay.
And then had in our league, you get to, per Cousin Sal's creation about a decade ago.
Find this fascinating.
Well, it seems fun.
Yeah.
But it is not fun. It really
it
isn't.
It's amazing.
Like, half the league sincerely enjoys it.
Right.
And the other half of the league desperately hates it.
Because they want to be in every year?
Yeah, who wants to get kicked out? To talk about humiliating. Having your significant other skate circles around you is child's play compared to having to pick up your stuff and walk out of a room filled with grown-ups you know and say, goodbye, see you next year.
You don't even get to stay for the draft. You got to go.
No, you're kicked out.
I love that idea. And also, I think I would secretly root for it because fantasy's a lot, and sometimes I don't want to do it.
Well, I mean, so what we do in our league is the reigning champ gets to kick out whoever they want, survivor style,
yeah,
but not until the night of the draft. And everybody has to be gathered before the announcement can be made. And we do it the night before the season kicks off. So if you have no other fantasy team and you get kicked out, you're high and dry for the entire
season. The whole year's done.
Yeah. So those are the stakes in doing that. And Simmons' big move is, which I can't stand, is... Because it's like...
Don't get me fired.
Listen, he thinks he's playing mind games.
Right.
And by the way, he was sure I was kicking him out this past year because I won in 2017.
I heard him talking to Sal about this on the pod.
Yes. Yeah. And in 2017, I won. He's like, damn it, Shek, I hope he kicks me out. Finally, I'm going to get kicked out. And that's like he thinks he's playing like he thinks he's Obi-Wan Kenobi. And he's messing with the stormtroopers in what's the name of the...
Any of the Star Wars movies.
What's that?
Oh, the first one, Star Wars.
Please tell me you know about Star Wars.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. They're on Mos Eisley, that's where they are.
All right.
When they go into the bar, the cantina, just before, Kenobi pulls up in the Land Cruiser with Luke and company, and he's like, these aren't the droids you're looking for. And then the stormtrooper goes like, these aren't the droids we're looking for. Move along. Simmons thinks he's doing that to us, and I resent it. When he's like, I hope I get kicked out. That's what I want. I don't want to be fantasy's dumb anyway. I don't want to be in your league. And then, like, he doesn't get kicked out. And I know
so you didn't kick him out.
I think he thinks to himself, like, I did it again. I did the mind trick on everybody. I made them think I wanted it, so they didn't give it to me what I wanted. But secretly, I do want it. I know he doesn't want to get kicked out. But I had a couple other people in my – and then because I'm a coward – when it came time to do it, I felt bad. I don't like, I'm a man of peace.
You're a softy at heart.
I'm a man of peace, you see. So I then decided in the moment, whoever shows up last has it coming. And that's a sort of a message. We had a time to start.
Show up on time, kick out.
Because then otherwise it's a subjective thing. And then I have to hurt your feelings. Like, here's why you're getting kicked out, because I don't like this about you.
This is a very Tom Coughlin move of you.
What I did was, I guess so. And it's ironic, too, because people can tell you that Dave is perplexed by keeping a tight schedule. But anyway, yes, I'm glad you were here so I could tell you this story. But anyway, what I did, though, which was a particularly clever move, I must say, because
yourself.
Simmons is with me and Kevin Hench, who I think you know, and a couple other people who hate this thing, who hate getting kicked out or the looming threat of getting booted. So I had Mark Garagos draft a document stating that if I don't kick you out, a legal document,
wow,
that if I don't kick you out this year, you cannot kick me out for the next 5 years. And everybody has now signed it, save the team that I kicked out.
Right.
So as long as they don't win, I'm clean for 5 years. And by the way,
that's genius.
I could have done it for 20 years, but I'm too classy for that. But I just
clever
did 5 years.
And classy, if you do say so yourself.
That's right.
I like it.
And soft on the inside.
And soft. All the good things.
Sweet way. Yeah. In a sweet way. I hope I get kicked out. If he ever says that to you, he means the opposite. He's trying to Jedi mind trick.
I'll keep that in mind if we ever end up in a weird fantasy league together.
Now, anywho, the Ringer booming, and especially it seems to me where the NBA coverage is concerned.
I like to think so. I think you're doing okay.
In large part because of you. And
very small part.
Well, I mean, it's
tangentially, maybe. Accidentally.
Well, it is a great team covering, pro basketball these days. So let's start there before we dip into, because one recurring theme, as anybody who listens regularly to the DDFP can tell you, this offseason has been plagued, I guess, for some people by my point that there is no one who has more pressure on them
in 2019 NFL than one Carson Wentz. Now, maybe he feels relieved with the new big new deal, but you could also make a case that the local media and the crush of the fans and everything else, if he is bad and it's late October, early November, and the team is scuffling as good as the roster is, that will only increase the heat on number 11.
Screams for Nate Sudfeld. Right. That'll be, I mean, like everybody loves a backup quarterback everywhere, but especially in Philly. And like, I don't know if what your statement about the most pressure in the league, you mean it writ large for the league, but certainly provincially in Philadelphia.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, the guy in that situation, I'm not talking about what we'll be talking about in California.
They're nutcases. I mean, and I say that because I come from the nutcases. I am one of myself and I love them. They're my friends and family, but Nick Foles is a very nice player who won a championship for them, and Godspeed, and I wish him well in teal green.
Do you?
Teal. Yeah, absolutely. I want nice things for Nick Foles. He seems like a nice guy. I've always had nice interactions with him when we've been in press conference settings.
By the way, it's interesting to think that Nick Foles could very well have vanquished the same Jaguars, and I won in the Super Bowl had Miles Jack fumble recovery pickup run it into the end zone counted in Foxborough, it would have been Eagles Jags. And then I wonder, because I like to ask what if about pro football, what if that had happened, would Nick Foles then have still gone? And in fact, would Nick Foles have even won the Super Bowl had he had to play that mighty 2017 Jaguars defense? Would we be talking about something completely different, that Blake Bortles is the man?
Yeah, that's a mind melter for me. The prospect of the Eagles somehow losing to the Jacksonville Jaguars in the Super Bowl as opposed to beating the New England Patriots, not quite as fun. I was there. I saw it. I saw Tom Brady drop that pass.
That would have diminished the deed, right?
I would have gone to Minnesota for that. I didn't want to go to Minnesota. Colleen made me. She said, you know, what's the opportunity here for the Eagles? Like, how many times do we think the Eagles are going to be in the Super Bowl? I've got these tickets. We should go.
I remember talking to the Wolf about that and saying, oh, you guys are going to have the best. She's like, yeah, I think he's going to go now. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He might not go to the Eagles are in the Super Bowl and he may or may not go.
So let's walk it through here.
You weren't going to a Flyers game. That wasn't on your schedule, keeping you out of there.
Certainly wasn't doing that. But as a Philadelphian who had experienced nothing but heartbreak with the Eagles my entire existence,
you were keeping your eye on the process. You didn't want anything to come off the rails there.
Well, no, it was just like, what are we talking about here? It's me leaving California in late January, early February, where it's nice to fly to a place where, while it is a nice city and I like the people, very cold. If you want to do the Star Wars thing, it's Hoth. It's Hoth in America.
Fair.
And I don't own a jacket. I burned all of my coats when I left Philadelphia because you don't need them here. So then I got to go to Minnesota to watch the backup quarterback try to beat the greatest team of the last 20 years.
Okay.
That seemed like a lot to me. Then I thought, well, if they somehow pull this off and I had an opportunity to go and I don't go, I'm going to kick myself forever. So whatever percentage chance they have of winning this game, I should just take it and suck it up and go. And I won't go outside unless absolutely necessary. And that's exactly what happened. They have those tunnel things or the walkway things.
They did have a lot of those. Yes.
They had a lot of those.
That's kind of the deal with, you know, for anybody who is wander curious, let's say, and you haven't really made it out of your own little provincial neck of the woods, you're okay going to the places that understand that that their region is susceptible to extreme cold.
Yeah.
Where you don't want to wind up is where places that are on the fence, like Dallas when it snowed at that Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's weird.
It paralyzed the city. What do we do here? Minnesota was like, yeah, it's cold out. Yeah, it's always cold out. Yeah, that's why, like you say, like you walk in the overpass thing between the buildings. We're equipped for this.
They built that on purpose. But the other component there were a lot of variables. And again, ultimately, I decided to go. But I don't know how it is for you, but in my spare time, I generally don't like to just watch other sports for fun. I mean, like, you know, I'm in on the NFL. I'm in on football. It pays the vast majority of our bills and thank you for that. But in general, like, I'm not going to plop down on a Saturday and watch a rando baseball game. So the idea of like, hey, this weekend, I got to get on a plane, which I have to do for work anyway,
I hear
to go watch more sports. But again, it worked out great. Way better than losing to the Jaguars.
No, I know. I suffer from the same thing. It's called laziness.
And yeah,
You know what? Actually, that's disparaging ourselves, and I won't stand for that.
I
have a feeling that you and I park our cars in the same garage. And
would
this, this isn't negative about. This isn't about the wolf, about my family or friends. You know, it really is my best friend, the one who's always been there for me, decade
Bill
after
Simmons.
Decade, TV.
Mm.
And you know what? I feel
close,
bad turning my back on TV. TV does so much for me. He's always there for me. When everybody else goes high and dry, TV, in my childhood, in the teen years, I'm going over to you, going to that kegger at Bruno's house today? Like, Bruno's not a good name. I don't know where that one came from. But anyway.
You knew a Bruno.
I didn't know. I don't know. The only Bruno I can think. Well, Sam Martino, the living legend who no longer is living, the WWF star. And then Bruno, who made the good movie, the fake documentary.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a funny movie. But anyhow, when everybody else was going to the keggers, I wasn't. I was at home.
You were hanging out with your best friend.
No, my sisters, they were off at parties. Even my parents, they were out and about on a Saturday night.
Left
Dave
you alone.
Was at home. Except I wasn't alone.
Right.
Because I had TV.
You had your friend.
And so I feel bad leaving TV behind in the big moments. Like, oh, I'm going to go to the fancy game. But TV's like, all season we've been hanging out, living and dying with these games. And now you go?
Got to dance with who brung you.
Thank you. But anyway, I'm glad you did leave your comfort zone.
And I'm glad too.
And got to pay witness to that. But anywho, to the matter at hand. First of all, there's a weird thing in sports that certain guys only thrive in certain uniforms. And I can tell Eddie Spaghetti behind the glass is a hockey reference, but it's the only one that really comes to mind.
Hi.
Alex Kovalev was not good. I mean, he was fine. There were flashes here and there in other situations. But only with the Pittsburgh Penguins did he truly thrive. And Nick Foles, in his journeys around the NFL, he's been a bust everywhere. And it really is just the jersey. It's not the coach, because he did well with
Multiple
Chip
coaches.
Kelly, too.
Yeah. It's very strange. Not a lot of people can operate under that kind of weird, provincial ethos where it's win at all costs. Otherwise, you got to go. And he's a quiet guy by nature. He's not super demonstrative. He doesn't play into that typical Philly grit. Like, you know, you hear, like, he's not a Philly kind of guy. I still don't know what the hell that means. Generally, it means, you know, loud and brash. He's the opposite of all those things, and yet somehow fit in perfectly there. I hope, however, that continues in Jacksonville. I hope it works out for him. And also, I hope Mike Schur can get some good material out of him for The Good Place, because, you know, Blake Bortles got, I mean, so many
That's
jokes
right.
on that. So I hope Nick Foles gets some jokes on that show.
That's right. That's a great point. Yeah. I feel like for Nick, and by the way, I do like the idea that the self-described Philadelphia natives, like, Nick Foles isn't a Philly guy. Like, what, polite? And and encouraging
nice.
To his guys,
right.
his other guys, like, we win. That's what's most like. That is not Philadelphia. That's not what we stand
Very
for.
Very unusual.
So anyway, it'll be interesting to see if he thrives down there. I think he's in some trouble, for the record. That I think in a defense-dominant division, all four of those AFC South teams figure to have really good defenses once again. And so I think the thing that wins that division are the couple of special plays. In fact, on Move the Sticks, Thomas Dimitroff was just on. And he said, like, you know, it's something you want to, everybody likes to be super egalitarian when it serves their purposes. Like Peyton Manning, when he throws the big pick in overtime against the Ravens way back when Joe Flacco's on his run, everybody liked to be like, hey, it's a team game. Can't hang that on 18. Raheem Moore blew the coverage at the end of the game. Like, yeah. The one guy's a Hall of Famer who makes way more than Raheem Moore. Doesn't he have to carry more of the load in that situation? So anyway, yes.
Great power and responsibility. You gotta carry your guys if you're supposed to be the guy, right?
That's right.
That's right.
That's
just like you do. Right here at DDFP.
I don't know about any of that. Okay. So let's talk about this. What I was gonna say is Dimitroff said you do need star power, and that is the difference. And Julio Jones is a difference maker, you can't get distracted by all that serious football guy talk about team game and the locker room and everybody's got to come together for one purpose. Perhaps all true, but you still need the star to be the star. In fact, Bert Breer, who you may or may not know, the Boston-based scribe, or at least used to be, now with SI, used to be here, got a lot of heat for joking online.
Which
about
time?
Well, he gets it a lot. He, good point.
All the times.
He showed a baseball, whatever it was, some sports trophy that his kid won.
Yeah, I saw this.
And he made a joke about, like, I had to break this, and everybody took him seriously. And so he got a lot of junk for it from the residents of Mount Pius. And I, you know, listen, as somebody who was a hanger-on, of course, I like my participation trophies.
Sure.
But to that point, even at the highest levels, isn't everything a participation trophy? When you are a hanger-on to an exceptional star, it's not the 12th guy on the Raptors can't feel as good as Kawhi feels today, right?
Jeremy Lin barely played, got a ring. I'll take it. I mean, you get to go on the parade float and drink wine with Marc Gasol and...
But Nate Sudfeld, but I buy the point that, you know, yes, participation trophy, harumph, not good for kids. But Nate Sudfeld is proof.
I would take it. Wouldn't you take it?
Of course I would take it. Yes.
And it's the old adage about the best job in the NFL is the backup quarterback or the third string, the guy who carries the clipboard. That sounds awesome to me. I don't have to get hit and you're going to pay me money and, you know, I get to enjoy whatever spoils my team has reaped. Sounds good. I'll do that.
By the way, I like Nate Sudfeld. I hope he gets a shot. Hoosier legend. Long lineage of Hoosier greats.
You're like a secret, even though you're a Pittsburgh guy, you're like a secret Philadelphian at heart because like gravitating towards Nate Sudfeld is going to happen. People will be calling for him, and you're already
there.
You think so?
So that's your final answer, is that Nate Sudfeld, at some point, the Boo Birds in Philadelphia will say, like, get rid of this Wentz, put in the kid.
The insurgency is already forming. They're having secret meetings. They've got... cabals that we don't know about yet, and they'll emerge.
Weigh in on this one then for me philosophically. Do you think if you were a Patriots fan, I'm trying to think of what the
very difficult for me to wrap my head around
Philadelphia equivalent of my of one of my favorite arguments to create is, and that really is what it is, just creating it out of basically thin air. I suspect
you've done a whole career out of that. It's really impressive.
Thank you. Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. If you love Tom Brady.
Heart.
And if you're Tom Brady himself, you know Tom Brady, he's so competitive. Mm. He certainly doesn't want the Patriots to be good the year after he retires, right?
Sure.
That would be bad for his reputation, for his legacy, if they go 12-4 and go to a Super Bowl, right?
I think, right, you'd like to think that he's benevolent and magnanimous and would root for his old guys.
No chance of that.
But if they just keep on keeping on without him, what's that say about your guy?
So if you're a Brady guy, mm-hmm. if you're a Patriots diehard, don't you want them to kind of want them to go 7-9 for one season? Because it kind of isn't fun. As we all listen to the serious football guys, I think we've bought in a little too much because it makes us seem smart to praise. I don't think you understand what the value of what Sean McVay has done to pro football. And Bill Belichick's a wizard. Like, so we root for coaches now? That ain't fun, is it? Like, that's what we're into is coaches?
No, but I do. I mean, like the people who are smart probably have an advantage in any enterprise, right? And so, if those coaches have succeeded because of their intelligence and the schemes that they've put in place, and they're able to shuttle players in and out and continue to win, good for them. But yeah, no, that's not fun. Although, I guess it's a continuation of just rooting for laundry, right? I mean, those guys who come and go. Come and go, but the rest of us stay put, right? Like, I always say that the real owners are really the fans because we've been sticking around forever.
What did I say, Spaghetti? We park our cars in the same garage, me and
it's a good garage.
That's exactly right. That I convenient. Always say when players or otherwise start giving me the business when I we and us it with the Steelers or any black and gold team, I immediately call them on. I'm not shy about giving them what for that. We and us, you weren't in the game. I was like, yeah, guess what? I was watching 35 years ago. Where were you? You've been with the team for 18 months. I think I care more about what happens to this team than you do.
You have equity. I draw for me personally. I don't do the we and us. I understand people who do. It doesn't bother me at all. Because again, you have sweat equity in the enterprise.
That's right. Thank you. At least I appreciate your support with that. Now, I also want to hear about your thoughts on OJ on on the Twitters.
Sure. Are we doing that now?
Well, I keep teasing the basketball.
You tell
thing,
me when so, you're ready.
Well, you know what? There's a football show, and OJ, I don't know if you heard, used to play football.
He did. At one time, he did a lot of things in his life.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
I've heard. including searching for people. I think that's
searching for ongoing
now into
to be continued
third decade now. O.J. Simpson, what do you think?
Twitter's a cesspool. Kills me. I've been getting. I don't know how you interact with Twitter these days. If it's changed. If your habits have changed. You know, now like with your iPhone, it'll give you how much time you spent on your phone per week. And then
it does.
It Ooh. Can. Yeah, you can turn on like a report of like how much screen time you've had. And then within that, it breaks down individually what apps you're using. Frequently for me, Twitter and sports apps and Slack are the highest. And then I've started to gravitate away from it. I, as you see here, my phone is down, not just because we're doing the podcast, normal protocol, but also because I'm trying to get off of Twitter unless I'm using it for work because it makes me angry. The blood boils.
Mm-hmm.
All of this is to say OJ can be lumped into that. Do I need O.J. Simpson's thoughts on these things? Do I need Magic Johnson giving me one quick line of, hey, congratulations to the Warriors or the Raptors? I don't. I don't need these things. I don't need them in my life. I want to see what you're tweeting and Colleen's tweeting, maybe the Around the NFL guys, and then I'm going to do this. I'm good.
I wonder how much damage it's actually done. That's a different conversation for another time that will require several hours. But the damage that social media, which seemed like such a fun and actually infotaining thing, you know, really, yeah. It remains the thing that I would say that defends Twitter, in defense of it. It remains, as people give me that, you're on Twitter too much. You know, it's the best, first of all,
as an aggregator,
as a promotional resource, it's something you must do. So that's one rationalization I have for using it. But two, it also exactly aggregates the news in almost real time.
Yeah.
If you're watching Twitter, you will see what's breaking in the world more quickly than you will if you're watching, you know, CNN or otherwise.
And I'm trying to keep it to just that. Right, that I need information for my job. I also need to get the content that I'm producing out into the world. So that's like a two-way street, and that's something that I could use it for, and I think it is beneficial for that. Things that fall outside that purview, I have tried to distance myself from, and again, I think OJ probably falls into that. This is a bunch of other stuff that I don't need in my life. I'm going to go over here and look.
Is there a desperate online provider that will give OJ money to make football picks or otherwise?
If there is one, it's probably Barstool, right? They'll probably come after me for that. But like, if it, like, water seeks its own level, feels like that would be a good match.
Spaghetti, what do you think?
From what I've heard about OJ, he's like, he posts up shop in the same bar/restaurant in Vegas and like talk shop with anyone that wants to come up to him regardless. So he's going to do it from, I mean, look, the guy is probably guilty, but like I have an issue with people who get mad at people for following him because it's like, who are you to say who you can or can't follow? Like, I follow because I want to see the train wreck. Like, I think that's totally fine. But I mean, I don't feel really strongly one way about him joining another.
I guess it's, you know, it's not as morally reprehensible as people would have you believe.
Did you give him a follow?
No. I'm not following. I don't need to hear from OJ, but I do think that people do get up on Mount Pie. I'm conflicted about that one. I think it's not a weird. I think it's a kind of a weird thing to plant your flag on, that I am on the right side of justice because I am not following OJ Simpson on Twitter. Is like, if that's the strongest stance you're taking, then you're not doing enough in
like
the world.
Like an hour ago, he tweeted something about fantasy advice or whatever about like.
Oh, he did. That's exactly what I was
like.
Just...
like Patrick Mahomes, Baker, and like Todd Gurley, and like he said a line about like who he's looking for, and like if I wasn't following him, I wouldn't have seen the really funny replies of people be like, "I know you found the ones who you're looking for." And so, like,
he's in the joint. He was in the joint. How would he know what's going on in pro football?
That's like I said, it's a train wreck. It's funny to watch.
Yeah, this isn't a moral thing for me. It's just more of my own personal mental state. I'm going to just try to
ignore
all that stuff.
Let's talk instead about what I really wanted to hear from you about. Make some sense for me.
Tell me.
And I'll make a larger point about Anthony Davis now joining the long and proud lineage of Lakers centers. Anthony Davis now in the Lakers uniform after one of the weirdest phenomenons that I've seen since I moved out here 20 years ago. And Chris Paul and that little blip with Blake Griffin and all that a few years back, it seemed like, wow, the Clippers might actually be better than the Lakers long term. And then that quickly fell apart. But now the Clippers are, in fact, better than the Lakers, despite them having LeBron James, the best player in the game this past season. So the Lakers had to do something dramatic, especially with all their front office nonsense.
Craziness.
So go ahead. Make some sense of what this means for the Lakers and for the Pelicans.
So for the Lakers, it's been a wild ride in the front office recently. I mean, Magic Johnson quitting on television and not telling Jeannie Buss that he was leaving, even though he loves her and she's his sister.
That was insane.
I mean, like,
in real time to be watching that. It
really
was
truly insane. And then right afterwards, like, if that had happened to me, were I a Buss, and thank God I am not, despite all the advantages that they have in life, were I a Buss and were I in charge of, you know, one of the two most historic franchises in NBA history, if Magic Johnson did that to me, despite the fact that Magic Johnson is a Hall of Famer and an all-time Laker, I'm going to tell Magic, hey, man, maybe don't come around for a while. Like, let's cool this off for a second, because you just quit on all of us in public, and this is very strange, and you threw everybody under the bus and then continued to do so. Instead, like, a week or two later, Jeannie and Magic went to dinner, and she put a picture of them cheesing on Instagram, and I'm like, what are you doing? Like, this is the same guy who just quit out from underneath you without even giving you a heads up. What are you doing?
That's protecting the brand.
Is
that's
it?
How I
think
took
it makes
that.
The brand look more foolish.
I agree, but I think in her mind, it's not good long term when the living Lakers fans hold Magic up higher than anyone else, with the possible exception of Kobe Bryant. And correct me if I'm wrong, that's what Rob Pelinka's existence in the organization is owed to, which is ironic too, because as I always like to remind Kobe and his supporters with the Lakers, he's the ultimate Laker. Yeah, then why did he want to get traded and just about did to the Bulls? And that wasn't his choice. He didn't pull out of the deal to the Bulls mid-career. The Lakers did. So it's weird that Pelinka is now the man. And correct me if I'm wrong again, it was the rift between Magic and Pelinka that drove the legend Magic Johnson out, or was it his own ineptitude and he's pointing the finger at the Rob Lowe lookalike?
All of the above. I mean, from all indications and everything I've heard in the reports, Magic didn't really like going to work to do his gig. And then on the other side, Rob Pelinka just sort of looked around after this whole thing and they needed somebody to do this work, and he's still doing it for reasons surpassing understanding. I think this trade with Anthony Davis is a classic. I'm in a spot that's tenuous as a general manager. If I make this move and it works out, fantastic. This could save my job in the franchise. If it doesn't work, they're going to fire me anyway. So I might as well, you know, throw it against the wall and see if it sticks and hope for the best. And it's going to be awfully difficult for them to round out the rest of the roster because of the salary cap constraints. But if I'm Rob Pelinka and they're still letting me pull some of the strings, I might as well pull as many as possible and, you know, keep my fingers crossed.
I get it. Do you think LeBron at this stage in his career, and by the way, I like to your point at the top of the show about watching other sports, practically it's difficult with my gaggle of children.
Yeah, you have a lot. They keep multiplying. Like, they're like gremlins.
Like four to
feeding them after midnight.
I know it's not a double digits yet. That's all I know. But I mean, like, there are a lot of them.
You're going to have to tag them like animals in the wild.
Something like that, but pro-brand them at least.
Yeah.
So like, oh yeah, you're one of mine. Okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't get to watch a ton of regular season NBA, so I kind of missed a fair chunk of LeBron's virgin run in the purple and gold. Was he misbehaving? Was he just, or was the team that bad? Was he pouting? Because that was the insinuation I picked up from the images I saw on the aforementioned Twitter machine of him sitting at the other end of the bench from the rest of the team and all of that.
Yeah, the body language stuff on that wasn't great. He was hurt as well. It was a weird, weird season. I thought it was going to be, because it's always been, if you've got LeBron, you're going to be good. You're going to make the playoffs. He hadn't missed the playoffs since, I believe, his second year with the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I just thought, put him on that team, put a bunch of guys around him, they're going to be fine. And as it turns out, that's not the case. That team that Magic and Rob assembled couldn't shoot at all.
Well, but that was weird, too.
Super weird.
As far as I'm concerned, because I've talked with some I'm trying to think of who it was I talked to who is a high-end basketball player about the notion of struggling to catch and shoot. that if you're a ball dominant guy for your entire life, like Brandon Ingram, that it's a weird adjustment that you're merely tasked with, yes, find open space on the perimeter, catch and shoot, knock it down. But it seemed like they had the pieces to do that, but with LeBron.
Yeah.
Get below the foul line, pitch it back out, knock it down. That's how the Cavs went to so many finals.
Yeah, well, the more recent vintage Cavs, the idea was surround LeBron with shooters, and instead, Rob and Magic surrounded him with not shooters. Hmm. They brought in JaVale McGee and Rondo and Michael Beasley and Lance Stephenson, who, in addition to not being able to shoot, they have a reputation as maybe not being like the greatest for your chemistry. So I thought,
look out, Raiders.
It was just very
strange.
What
do you think about so are the Raiders then going to be Lakers?
Super excited about Hard Knocks.
Richie?
Oh, I can't wait
Richie,
AB,
and Vontaze all together, huh?
Give me all of it. And then you've got the front office situation, and you've got Gruden. And
imagine that. Gruden and Mark Davis. I mean, all
incredible.
Levels, it's going to be the best. We march on, I don't know who, NFL Films, I guess, if they try to choose any team other than the Raiders.
This has to be the greatest Hard Knocks since the Cowboys eras, right? I mean, it has to be.
Well, I liked that. What was his name again? Dave Campo.
Dave Campo.
It's the same thing.
I covered that team.
Did you really?
Yeah, in Dallas, yeah.
Wow.
Back when Randall was there. Yeah, that whole
thing. Is that the weirdest one of the weirdest example of Mike Brown was pretty good, too, when he was the Lakers coach for two games.
Yeah.
Clay Helton. I think it's weird when franchises, these the most iconic and luminous franchises in sports, have coaches like Dave Campo. I think that it's weird. It ain't right. Whether you like him or not, like, they got to have a name. You know, I don't care who it is. He has to have some track record of doing, I don't know what, but he's got to be somebody. You can't have Clay Helton be the coach of your team.
Yeah, it was a weird situation.
By the way, Lakers in the same situation now.
Yeah, with Rob, where everybody looked around and said, well, somebody's got to technically do this, even though it's like some conglomerate of the Rambuses and Genie and whomever, but it's, you know, Rob, somebody's got to get on the phone and call the other general manager and say, hey, what do you think? Sort of Rob. But yeah, with Campo, somebody's got to call these plays, right? Like, we're going to need practice. Can somebody do this? Like,
I mean, he couldn't even do the, like, let's get it together. 1, 2, 3, team. He couldn't even do that. You know, the team didn't care about him enough.
What is he doing these days?
I have no idea what Dave Campo's up
to. Bless Dave Campo's heart.
I'd love to know. Yeah, I'd be intrigued. So, okay. So now as it stands, LeBron, Anthony Davis, yep. Kyle Kuzma.
Yep.
That's a good three.
Who was evidently a sticking point in the trade negotiations in the Magic version.
Oh, it's Spaghetti. Go ahead, Spaghetti.
Yeah,
break the
us.
Big news. This is exciting.
He's a consultant for the Trojans.
Ah, yeah. Okay. Sure. Good work if you can get
that's
it.
That's great. What a talk about. Can we do a college football equivalent of Hard Knocks? We
that
need that
great.
At USC, because that's a good one as well.
I'm on board with it.
All right, go ahead. So those three.
Yes. Kyle Kuzma was apparently a sticking point in the original during the season before the trade deadline negotiations. The front office for the Pelicans wanted to include Kuzma, and now this current front office decided to get a pick instead of Kuzma. I guess the Lakers didn't want to give up Kuzma because somebody else has to play in addition to Anthony Davis and LeBron. And also, LeBron really likes Kyle Kuzma. You mentioned the shooting. Stand over there, fire up some threes. You're going to see a bunch of that from Kuzma next year. But who else they get is going to be complicated.
Can they get Kyrie?
So I've heard a lot about the K's, Kemba, Kyrie, and Kawhi. I don't see how any of them end up there because the cap space, the rules, I'm not going to bore the DDFP audience here, but the general gist here is...
Or its host, because it's not that I'm bored by it. I have no facility for high-end
cap space
math.
And yeah, numbers and the whole thing.
I don't understand it.
Let's do this.
I chose this as a career to avoid that kind of talk.
Let's do this. Had they filed some paperwork in one way, they could have had a lot more money. But because of the way they got to file the paperwork now, they're going to have a lot less money. And to get the guys that we just mentioned, they needed the more money paperwork filing.
It's that simple, a screw-up? It's like the fax machine thing with Elvis Dumervil. Like, we screwed up something in the front office, and now we're going to pay for it
as a
team?
No, they didn't screw it up. But the Pelicans have some say in all of this, and like when the trade becomes official, and because the Pelicans wanted, rightly, a lot to give up Anthony Davis, they also wanted... the paperwork to be filed that more in their favor, because the pick that they got, they're hoping to flip to somebody else, and it makes it a more attractive asset. And again, more money versus less money. They're more likely to have less money than they would need to get those guys. So they're still going to need to fill out this roster. And the debate around the league right now is, how much of the less money allocation do you give to one really good player, maybe not a superstar, and then take the crumbs that are left over and, you know, veteran minimum type of stuff? Or do you sort of chop it up evenly and try to get some like average to slightly below average guys and pad out the roster with more capable players?
First of all, both of these true in Los Angeles right now, I keep saying about Phil Rivers, wouldn't it be the saddest irony for a guy that kind of kept a team relevant-ish for so many years on what for many years was a depleted offensive line and so on and so forth. If Phil Rivers finally on what is close to the most loaded roster in the AFC is the weak link, how likely is it, no matter what the Lakers do, if they add some decent role player guys around Anthony Davis, who some would argue a year ago was the best player in the NBA, Kyle Kuzma, a rising star, how likely is it that the reason that the Lakers don't look good based on this new approach is because LeBron James is no longer the LeBron James we've come to know over the last 15 years?
That would be fascinating. I suppose it's a possibility, because at some point time comes for all of us.
So there were no signs, because like I said, I didn't see LeBron. So there was no indication of his play that he's like, wow, he doesn't look so good anymore.
His counting stats were still mostly there. Maybe his efficiency numbers weren't quite as good. It was hard to gauge, because it was a new team with a new roster, and also he suffered what was one of the longest stretches of being out because of an injury in his career, if not the longest. I'd have to go back and look at it. It's a possibility, yeah. And I mean, this is literally something that I was wondering when this all went down, where I thought, like, does LeBron have a bounce back year? Because immediately, the second that they got Anthony Davis, they shot to the top of the Vegas odds to win the NBA title next year. And I thought, is that true? Because for it to be true without the rest of the roster, you have to get the LeBron that we saw during those, you know, battling the Warriors for the championships and winning one and ending the Cleveland drought of 50 years, that version of LeBron, not the version of LeBron this past year where he went, I'm pretty good still, but maybe not that great. And also, I'm a little banged up, and I haven't really elevated these young guys, and I'm going to go away for a while, and I'll see you next season. If they get that guy, then it's going
to
be difficult.
It is weird because, and by the way, credit to Simmons. He's the first guy who I at least recall identifying the notion of your three max contracts have to be dominant players, and the reason your Sixers were not going to be good, he predicted 11 years ago, is because Elton Brand can't be your best or second best player getting the max deal. And I remember when Baron Davis backed out of that whole thing. Yep. That was that whole mess.
And now maybe you can be good with him as your general manager, but not as your max guy. That's true. I mean,
but now does Kawhi, I like to call him Kawhi.
Whatever, throw it out there. I like it.
Yeah, he's not loud enough to push back on it. He doesn't seem like the kind of guy who'd correct me. Whatever.
He's going to love this. He's a big DDFP guy.
Is he really?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Who is it?
Well, then muscle tough team.
The NBA, I mean, that's all we talk about.
Dirk, okay, so are Dirk's Mavs in, what was that, 13, 11?
11.
11. Yeah. In 11, and Kawhi's Raptors of 2019, it doesn't matter to Golden State fans need to get over this idea that this thing has an asterisk on it. The Raptors fans will never care. Raptors fans will never look back, and 20 years from now, it will be moot to the rest of the NBA world that Klay Thompson got hurt, yep, and KD got, that is not something that is just not something. Believe me, I have tried to push that with some of my teams. Yeah, but if Alan Henderson hadn't torn his knee 3 weeks before the tournament in 93, the Hoosiers definitely would have taken care of business that year. Nobody cares. Nobody remembers it. All they talk about is Eric Montrose's UNC against the Fab Five and Chris Webber's timeout and all that kind of stuff. And by the way, as far as that goes, UNC does not care. Like, yeah, we would have won if Chris Webber wouldn't have done that. Like, yeah, so what? That's what happened. And that it's vexing if you're on the wrong side of it. Anyhow.
Tell me.
I have no idea even where I was going with
the Raptors and the Mavs, 2011-19.
Yes. So are they the exceptions? Like Joe Flacco?
Yes. They are.
So you still need it going forward in the NBA. The model remains big three and then surround those guys.
So you've got the 2019 Raptors who had an excellent season and had, you know, a top, wherever you want to slot Kawhi. He's one of the great players in the NBA. He's one of the best two-way players. Unquestionably, they had a lot of depth. But if you look back over X amount of years of NBA history, they're an outlier for a number of reasons. One, they had, you know, one guy and a supporting cast that was very good, as opposed to multiple guys. And two, it was sort of a feel-good story as opposed to like this dynastic team. You had the 2019 Raptors who fit into that model, the 2011 Mavs who certainly fit into that model, and then that like weird 2004 Pistons team with like Rasheed Wallace,
yes,
Larry Brown went to coach them,
the star heavy, or yeah. Like it was like that 10 deep of superstar name brand NBA yeah. Lakers with Karl Malone and Gary Payton and all those guys, right? Yeah, that's who they beat.
It was that team,
right?
And that, and like that was no superstar. But every other team falls into multiple superstars.
Such a weird body.
Very strange.
Way he'd fire that elbow into your face.
Rip Hamilton and Coatesville's Rip Hamilton, Philadelphia area native. But otherwise you have, you know, GSW and you have the Cavs and then you had the Heat, you know, LeBron, obviously the common thread. And then you had the Spurs dynasty of multiple decades here in the aughts. And then you had the Lakers and then going back into the 90s, the Bulls, and all of these teams have that common theme of, you know, a generational talent or generational talents on the team. And then, like, after a while, they became less fun to watch and root for because they were dominating the NBA for a while. So I think the Raptors championship was fantastic. I enjoyed my time in Canada. People were very excited. Notwithstanding the unfortunate immediate booing of KD when he went down and the waving.
Yeah.
That was
bad form.
But the rest of it, great. Good for them. I hope they're enjoying themselves.
Kawhi leaves.
I think so. I mean, it makes it easier now. Maybe he signs a 1-1. I think that Toronto is hoping that he signs a 1-1 and they bring it all back, because if they do, immediately they're a top contender. They're probably even the favorites to win the NBA championship again.
Hmm.
Maybe he does that. However, there's been so much talk about him going to the Clippers and going to Los Angeles, and maybe this makes it easier for him. Hey, I did what we set out to do.
It is the right formula, right? Based on the way they're constructed, there would be no one as big a star, which is a weird thing to say about him because he seems to not like the spotlight himself, but he wants to be the man, right?
In a way, it's the perfect – I mean, I think Toronto is the perfect team for him because he gets all of that support and adulation without having to do any of, like, the being the superstar off the court stuff. You know, he doesn't really like the camera. He doesn't really like the spotlight. He doesn't really like the interviews and the media and all that stuff. And Toronto just lets him – the whole of Canada just lets him be Kawhi without having to do all that superfluous stuff. He could somehow still do that in Los Angeles, of all places, with the Clippers, because the Clippers do that. The Clippers have made an entire career of doing just that, like kind of being overlooked in one of the biggest and most important cities in the country. He could do that here. He would go, and they would be the best team, you know, arguably in the NBA and certainly in this city, and yet all the oxygen would be getting sucked up by the Lakers.
I mean, that's what I want so bad, is for that rivalry to emerge. Listen, I want it in pro football too, and it kind of slipped under the radar a little bit. The talk was more about how many Chargers fans weren't at Chargers home games last year as the team rose up. I hope that maybe some Chargers fans rally around that. I feel like maybe they mishandled the marketing of that, really, in the close to the same level that LeBron mismanaged his move to Miami. I think that the bones of that were fine. There was no issue with that other than the superfluous stuff around it. You know, it would be, as I've said before, here's a great story for America in the 21st century. Hey, guess what, working man? Guess what we did? We eschewed at the bourgeoisie. We don't need GMs and owners and all that. At the player level, at the working man's level, we got together and we are forming a super team. Cleveland, state of Ohio, LeBron could have said, I love you, but it ain't going to happen here right now. It breaks my heart to do this. I want to bring a championship home, and believe me, when I win that, you are a part of that. You are with me. I'm sorry. This has been a great run. This has been a special time for me to get to play in my home state. Instead, all the fireworks and the, like, I'm taking my talents. It's like, that was the bungled part.
Yeah.
In the same way, the Chargers, they just have to say, like, we're not we're not leaving San Diego. We're just embracing Southern California. They should have been the Southern SoCal Chargers, right?
SoCal Chargers is a great idea. As somebody who lives in Southern California, I'm curious how much you think of it as the Chargers fans not showing up because there was a lot of that talk. Is logistics? Because when teams are coming in to Southern California, it becomes a destination for the fans from around the country to come to Southern California. We live here. It's very nice. Of course. Hey, do you want to go see the Eagles play the Rams? Yes, of course. That sounds great. Why don't we do that? Or all of a sudden the Bears come to town. People in Chicago go, it's cold here, as we discussed. Let's go to Southern California. This is the right time to
exactly.
do it.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And it's not the same as being a diehard surrounded by provincial supporters of your local teams. Obviously in Pittsburgh, it's not populated by no matter how big or small the game, there ain't, I don't care how close the visiting team is, the Lions are close. There ain't a lot of blue and silver fans or Honolulu blue fans running around Heinz Field. That's just not the way it operates. In LA, this is a town where people are from other places. Before sure. you even talk about making a weekend, our team's going on the road. Ooh, they're going to be in LA. Ooh, let's take it
that one.
It's not even just that. It's that so many people are from other places here.
But my question for you about the SoCal Chargers, people who are from here and who might consider themselves Chargers fans, and again, San Diegans have a reputation for being sort of laissez-faire, right? Mm-hmm. But just logistically for us, when we live in LA, I live on the west side. I go to the east side and downtown only to cover basketball games because I have to, because the traffic is horrendous. So if you're a Chargers fan who lives in Santa Monica or Venice or San Diego still, mm-hmm. Carson's far. It's going to take a long time.
It's a weird thing. Like, it's central to all those places. Yes, but convenient to no one.
To nobody. That's right. Why I think part of it was, if you're a Chargers fan, you're like you mentioned earlier, my friend TV and I might just hang out today. I got to get in my car.
I hear you.
I'd rather not.
It's transitional. By the way, I can't wait to take Jean-Claude Van Damischek to see his first Pittsburgh Steelers football game in Carson, California this autumn. I can't wait for that. It's also interesting where the two pro football teams are concerned that LA is one of the few sports markets that pro football isn't king. Isn't that strange? I would say that's true kind of in like Atlanta and maybe Nashville, where the college football is maybe a little bit larger. And I think that the Lakers run
for
LA.
Sure.
Without more than the Dodgers, more than the Rams, anybody or anyone
unquestionably
else.
I think.
Right?
Like 90% of the talk.
What are the other markets where that's
Yankees,
so?
In New York, for sure.
Really?
Yeah.
Yankees are bigger than the Giants?
Oh, for sure.
Ultimately, choose one,
it's
New
too
York,
split.
You can either watch the Yankees or the Giants to the exclusion of the other for the rest of your days, and people would say, oh, I'll take the Yankees.
Then. It's too split with the Jets and Giants. Yankees have, I think, a much wider fan base. I think it's definitely the Yankees. When you win 26
times. Well, to some
degree,
that's got to be true with the Metropolitan,
with the Mets, yeah,
right?
But I think ultimately the Yankees are king in New York. If I had a guess. I also think in Boston, too.
I was going to say, does Boston...
Red Sox.
Would they fall in?
I think it's the Red Sox, too, in Boston.
Red Sox bigger than the Patriots? Maybe so.
That's a generational experience, the Red Sox, and they have been super good. Concurrent to the Patriots being super good. So maybe the Patriots didn't overtake them.
Let me talk to you about something else.
Yes, please.
Magic Johnson has attempted to make the transition from being a legendary player to then he coached him for a little bit. That didn't go well. Then he was like, wasn't he a player coach for like a couple weeks or something?
I don't remember if he was a player coach. He was a coach for a second.
Real jacked and everything.
Didn't work out.
To look at. Yeah. Then now he goes to the front office. That doesn't work out. Proving that it is very difficult to be a icon for a team that then transcends the years and the decades and to remain that powerhouse, a figure for that one organization. I assert Mario Lemieux is the single most important person to one franchise in at least North American sports history. The only person who could possibly rival that, John Elway.
I was going to say, where would you throw Elway? Yeah.
Oh, no, he's kind of having some tough times right now.
Yeah, not great. Danny Ainge is interesting.
Okay, but not, I mean, certainly not the player. Not like a.
He was never, a very good player.
Oh, he's not a Hall of Fame guy.
Not a Hall of Famer. Would it have to be with the same franchise?
Yes, yes.
So it can't be just that they had a good, like.
Steve. Well, by the way, Gretzky would never, could never be, because he played for the Blues and he played for the Rangers and he played for the Kings. I mean, how would you, who do you even identify him with at this point?
I was just having this thought during the finals with Steve Kerr, not to give away free content here, but just like Steve Kerr has been consistently just really good to better than that at everything he's ever done. Huh. He was a super useful player in the NBA who was on multiple championship teams with the Spurs and the Bulls. He was a general manager of the
like
Suns.
Like John Paxson before him hit the big shot, the series clinching shot.
Massive shot.
Jazz Barkley might have a ring if it weren't for John Paxson.
Might have, and the same deal with the Spurs. And then he becomes a very good color analyst on television. Excellent.
Yes.
Right. He was a really good general manager with the Suns at a time when the Suns were not good, and he helped fix them. And now he's a multi-championship winning coach for the Golden State Warriors. And also, I would submit to you, perhaps the best interview in the NBA. I mean,
is
really
he really?
Just a super thought.
He's very funny.
Topic funny, self-deprecating, super topical, somebody who's not afraid to wade into a very charged political atmosphere at a time when I think we need that kind of
discourse. I'd love to talk to him. Can you hook that up?
He's awesome. Yeah, I'll just call him.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward. Kerr coming up on the DDFP. Yeah. Breaking news here.
Hold on for that one.
I'm excited about that. Any thoughts you have to weigh in here? The Sixers, the process. I told Philadelphia fans, this ain't worth it. Nothing's worth it at this point. Now, listen, I say this as from the other side of Pennsylvania, as a Pirates fan. Mm-hmm. In this, you know, I know they have some variation on the cap at this point, but it still is the haves and have nots. And I say, if you're like a Royals fan, if you get over the hump that 1 year like they did, now you got to stay quiet for 25 years at least. Like, you got over the hump improbably. That's that. Everything went right. And now you can't cry about the state of your team, even if they lose 100 games for the next 15 years. I think that in Philadelphia, with the cap and everything else, and some sense of the potential to win a championship. Although I admire that the NBA, it's hard to be an overnight success. Mm-hmm. I don't like the parity. I don't like the 1 year really? Rise and fall in the NFL. I think the Patriots have done the NFL a great favor. I know that everybody likes, for marketing reasons and for fan engagement, that it's good at the start of every season. That I think most people would say this is a great success. That you can say this about the NFL. Right now, as we sit here in June, it's much harder to make a case about why a team's going to be is going to be putrid in 2019 than it is to make a case for a team. Yeah, I can see them getting to the playoffs. How many teams can you rightly say right now, oh, I know they're going to stink, besides the Dolphins? And even the Dolphins now, what if Josh Rosen is great? What if he turns the corner? Can you rightly say, oh, we know that's a garbage team right now? Is that to the NFL's credit? Perhaps. But it's also bad. Like, the Eagles are, the Patriots have been the through line. They've sure. provided the baseline for the NFL. And if you take that, you take the rhythm section out, which is Brady and Belichick, it's chaos, you know? It's Miles Davis in the playing cool. And now it just sounds like noise to me.
I enjoy that about the NFL. I like the parody. I like that we don't know from year to year. There's always a team that was really bad that all of a sudden is in the playoffs, and you go, where the hell did that come from? In the NBA, that's much harder to pull off. There was an expectation that this would be another Golden State Warriors coronation, and it's certainly to the Raptors' credit. I thank them for heading that off at the pass. I'm glad it wasn't that.
Really? I yes. see. To me, it's better. I'm like James Earl Jones at the end of Field of Dreams. What you want are dynasties, even if you don't know you want them at the time. What you want is 15, 30 years from now to look back and say, I was there for it. I was one of the great marketing campaigns in my lifetime was the LeBron, the Witness stuff in Cleveland, that you were seeing something special, different.
That was fun.
Transcendent, right?
There's no doubt about it. But I like the intrigue. I like that first there to be some sort of mystery to the regular season rather than just going, oh, we're going to play out this 82 games because they don't matter. And then once we get into the postseason, it's going to be the Warriors again. And it was to a certain extent.
Yeah,
but
what we're
getting now is sort of a reorganization of the league that we haven't had in a while. And yet, still, yeah, there's a number of teams that you could pretty much strike them off the list right now, and we haven't even gotten to the draft, which is on Thursday, and we haven't gotten to the offseason.
What about culturally, though? About the, you know, just the overarching from the here and now of the sport. What about my point, which is I make only with half my tongue in my cheek or whatever about the proletariat. Isn't it good that the players are amongst themselves forming these little super teams?
Without a doubt.
I'm not going to be traded by you. We're going to talk and we're going to decide where we all go.
I'm 1,000% on board.
But then people hated the Golden State Warriors and they hated the Heat for doing precisely that.
Take some agent. I'm for players having agency because, you know, we say that sports are a business and we don't get worked up when players get traded by teams, but then we do somehow get worked up when players go and form their little super teams on their own.
I say go and do it,
no doubt about it. The byproduct of that, however, is sometimes unfortunate, and these last however many years of Golden State Warriors being unimpeded, you know, until they ran into Kawhi and got hurt, it sucked.
Right, but of course, and despite the fact that I say the Raptors fans in 20 years, no NBA fan will care, the fact remains, KD isn't hurt. The Warriors whip the Raptors before you even get to Klay Thompson's injury. They, and by the way, Klay doesn't get hurt in game six. I said before game five, get ready, because Golden State's at minimum taking this to seven. And that exciting rally, when Kawhi couldn't be stopped for those couple of minutes, he's just knocking down everything, and you're like, well, wow, he's going to pull this off, and this is going to be legendary stuff, and I'll be wrong. And then all of a sudden, Steph drops that three, and then Klay takes that extra dribble as they move it all the way around the perimeter, and he knocks down another one, and you're like, the champs are going to do it.
Yeah. I'm glad they didn't.
I talk all the time about Sposta, the curse of Sposta. Mm-hmm. That is a pressure that, and I talked to a lot of players about this, the good play, the star players. We talk about participation trophies and all that. If you're the star and everything is on your back and everybody knows it, that is more pressure than anything else you can put on somebody. Steph Curry had all the pressure. If you're going to save the season here in game five, you better do something, Steph. And he did it. Now people are giving him the business for not doing it in game six. But
I'm glad he didn't. I'm glad the Raptors won. You said that in 20 years, nobody will think about it. I will think about it because had one of those four bounces in game seven against the Sixers gone out, maybe the Philadelphia 76ers are your champions. I like to think of them as the transitive property champions of the NBA in 2019.
Second
best team in the NBA.
That's
nobody
a fun game to
wrong.
Play, too. That's another philosophical debate. I, in college football and college basketball, certainly. And yet it doesn't go into the pro level, although it now has for you, I guess. I don't get people who root for, like, I'm a Big Ten guy, went to Indiana. In basketball, that we had our years there, not so many lately. But in football, it's good for the Big Ten. I'm a Big Ten guy. Like, this self-identifying as a conference guy is a weird thing. Why? What do I care? Michigan and Ohio State embarrass us. Now I want to see them get embarrassed. I don't want to see – doesn't do me any favors for them to win a national championship.
Yeah.
No, I hope they get shamed like they shamed us that day. They spoiled a perfectly fine Saturday for me.
This is a conversation I've had with my friends from Philadelphia. I think it's pretty split. There are a number of people who were not rooting at all for the Toronto Raptors. But once they did win, everybody went, well, you know, had they forced the biggest and toughest series of any team that the Raptors faced in the entire postseason. So
what's the big shakeup coming in Philly for the Sixers? Any?
I think that they're trying to bring everybody back. Right now, it feels like... and. My sense pre-KD injury was Butler would definitely be back and maybe Tobias Harris would end up walking, which is going to – I'm not going to do the numbers thing again, but it would zoom them into luxury tax and make team building very difficult. Post-KD injury, I wonder if all of a sudden Jimmy Butler starts to think that now that there's an opening in New York that maybe there wouldn't have been had KD not gone down. I still think it's more likely than not that he stays. And then with Tobias Harris, who knows? But, yeah, they're going to try to run it all back because they think that, yeah, we did push the champions to seven games and it was a miraculous circus shot. And why it could have been us. Why not? Let's run it back.
That is interesting. And now the new vacancy owed to KD and Klay Thompson for the foreseeable future is going to be irrelevant. So Golden State is suddenly, out of the playoffs now, probably.
It's going to
be. So it's Steph and Draymond is the team next year. That's not enough.
I think.
To be a contender, at least.
Well, so the problem becomes you want to retain. It might make it more likely that because KD got hurt that he ends up staying, either picking up his option and just rehabbing on their dime or signing a contract
right.
to some extent.
That makes sense.
And sticking around. But yeah, you're definitely not going to have KD at all next year, one way or the other on the court for Golden State. Klay is going to resign with them, but who knows when he comes back. So locking in that money, again, makes building out your roster more difficult. So, yeah, it's going to be Draymond and Steph and a bunch of who knows. Is that enough to get you to the playoffs in a Western Conference? It's awfully stacked and very difficult. I don't know. But I think like all the things that you mentioned about the pressure is on the main guy. The pressure is going to be on Steph Curry. What is Steph Curry going to do?
Is KD the main guy ultimately, perhaps? And I love the idea. What's best for everybody's legacy, perhaps minus Steph Curry's, because he's not going to be able to elevate that team to a top four seed or whatever. Maybe they backdoor into the playoffs, but I just can't imagine how good that team could be, you know, barring some miraculous signing or the draft pick. I don't know what would make them relevant in 2019, 2020. But I feel like the best thing for KD's legacy is to go back there and to remind everybody like, oh, yeah, you plug me back in with these guys and we run the table one more time like we should have done back in the spring of 2019. That just further entrenches him as one of the most special players of all time. However, I did say I still go Larry Bird and Magic Johnson over KD at the end of the day. And Larry Bird's a more direct comp. But I think people bristle at that idea. But Larry Bird, and how about my larger question, greatest NBA rival? I mean, greatest NBA dynasty.
Ever?
Yeah. Don't say the Celtics, because that one doesn't count.
I mean,
Willie McGinnis sat behind the glass the other day and said that. He said, well, that was the measure of a champion. But to me, if there are only seven other teams in the league and you only had to play two rounds and win seven total games to win the title, well, that's not exactly what we're talking about anymore. So it's not really, it's apples and oranges.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I never get into those like cross-generational comparisons, because it's so difficult to compare. Like, how do you compare the different eras?
There are markers.
The style of basketball is obviously very different. I mean, like one era, the kind of sort of had the 3-point line once it was folded in, but it was seen as a gimmick. And now all anybody does is shoot
fair.
And get to the rim. And like the style of play is just so different. I wonder, like, you know, Michael Jordan, who was an okay 3-point shooter, what would he look like in today's game? I mean, he's still one of the top two players ever, if not the greatest. You could debate that with whoever else you want. I just wonder. I wonder how you compare.
All right, so I said last week Golden State over the Bulls, and apparently Ryan Hollins has said the same thing this week. And then Shaq doesn't like that. Or, you know, the one people sleep on, because maybe it didn't last that long, but the Shaq Kobe Lakers.
Yeah, they were great.
Are kind of should be in that conversation. We've moved past them. And the other one that it's funny when I bring them up, people are kind of like, what? Why would you? The 80s Lakers.
Sure. 80s Lakers are great. You throw the Spurs of the early aughts and actually even the teens into that. I mean, they did it with multiple teams over, 15
That's us cheering
years.
For a coach again. And as I've already said,
well,
you
had Duncan and Manu and Tony Parker were the constants. But so this is not a very I work in sports ethos, but I can't help myself. I don't get very hot takey. Like, look at all those teams and I go, they were all very good.
I don't like that.
Why can't they just all be good? Why do we have to pick a best?
Spaghetti. Tell them that that's the wrong way to think. That's not good thinking. That's stinking thinking, friend. You got to think that way. What's all of it? All of it is about, like, who's the best? What do you mean? That's what
know.
The whole...
I get very tired with the whole, we've got to debate everything and I have to
you
be right.
You don't have to debate everything. You have to debate this. What do you mean? This is why we... This is what's our reason.
I know. Somehow I ended up in this field anyway. I think I tuckered myself out in Philadelphia with sports talk radio. Like, everything was a hot take. And
yeah.
One day...
Are you accusing me of being a hot taker?
No, I'm just saying, you know, I've since mellowed since coming to California.
Spaghetti, am I a hot taker?
No, I don't think you're a hot taker. I think you more of like theories and dive deep into theories. You don't say like player X stinks because of this, and then like you don't do that.
Yeah, I don't. Yes, I don't go after.
You're not Skip Bayless-ing me.
I was gonna say yes. The hot taker to me is the one who goes after sacred cows and says, you know, you think that team's good or that guy's good, they're not really.
Yeah. I'm the opposite. I like to look at them and go, oh, they're all very good.
That's why you like the NFL so much,
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, I like them to be
good. The offseason is rich stuff for you.
It's fun.
All right, listen. Anything else we should talk about? How long have we gone here, Spaghetti? Wait, this is a fun game that we're starting to do, is to guess how long, because I have no... Once we start spinning...
Is it Price is Right rules, closest to the number without going over, or is it just closest to the number?
I do a game down at the... Oh, I told Ross Tucker this, too, or he paid witness to it, is I do that at the salad bar down at the huddle here at the NFL. I do the measure, and if I guess it on the nose,
they give it to you for free?
Well, they don't, but they should, because that's a pretty good carnival trick, and I've done it on multiple occasions. But I will say that on this day, with the great John Gonzalez, we have been speaking now 51 minutes.
Over.
Over. Yeah, John's right. You always undersell it.
Way over.
Way over that?
Times
I'm
going to
say we've gone at least an hour, if not more.
Yeah, correct.
How long?
It's almost an hour 10.
Oh, there you go. God,
I'm sorry.
20 minutes off.
I said, he goes, hey, can you come in? I said, how long are you looking for? It's no problem. It's very busy in the NBA right now. 20, 30 minutes. All right.
I didn't say no 20-30.
Ballpark.
I'm gonna look at our exchange. I'm pretty sure that I know myself enough to say 35 to 45. That was still.
We've gone an hour and 10. Feels like a breezy 20 talking to you. I've enjoyed it.
Hey, so you and the Wolf are off on your now annual European swing.
Who knows where we're going to go? We're going to get on that plane. We
you
get
can't
on that
say
jet
anymore.
Plane.
The Wolf is too famous now. You can't risk letting people know, rogues know where you're going to be on the big blue marble.
She's very important out in the media sphere. Mm-hmm. So we try to keep it under wraps a little bit. But for me, also, I don't know a lot of the logistics because, again, it's NBA silly season. We go right from the finals into the draft, into free agency. It's madness. She just tells me when to get on the plane, and then off we go.
I used to say about my ex that I wasn't with her because she was a good cook. I didn't know she was a good cook until later on, and then it was kind of like I used to liken that to the Florida Marlins getting Dontrelle Willis and being like, wow, he's a great pitcher. Like, whoa, he's a great hitter. Who knew? Bonus.
Yeah.
What's it like for you? You and the Wolf get together forever ago. You know, sure. You guys have been together. You're, struggling journalists, or media types, whatever. Philadelphia. Right. Oh, wouldn't it be cool if one of us could get a byline at the Inquirer or get a little local show. Now you're both booming. And you're doing great at the Ringer, doing marvelous work there. But the Wolf has, via television and otherwise, sort of, she's headed to the stars. Like,
sure.
There's
already there.
She's Chris Berman, basically, for NFL Network. What's that like?
It's incredible. It's wonderful.
You're proud of her?
So I get this a lot where people will ask me, when you were mentioning the emasculating part and saying, like, well, your wife is doing very well and you're doing fine, but she's doing very well. And I'm like, so let me get this straight. I'm supposed to feel bad about being married to somebody who's very smart, funny, sweet, gorgeous, hyper successful. I'm happy being whatever I am.
But I mean, do you guys sit around?
This is amazing.
Are you able to sit around at least with each other over some rosés and say, like, I can't believe this is so crazy. This is awesome.
Yeah, we're very fortunate, and we think about that a lot.
You talk about that a lot.
Yeah, of course.
Not like, yeah, this is what, yeah, this was always the plan.
No.
People who are like that stink. Because now they've missed everything. Like, they'd be like, yeah, I always saw myself here. All right, well, then it was wasted on you, you bum.
I've never thought really about where my career is going to end. I've always been like hop from one lily pad to the next and hope not to get my feet wet. And so far, so good. I will say that this exceeds my wild expectations. And I want to really clarify that all of it is really her. Like 97%, if not greater than that.
Pshaw, I say to that, you have done it by your own rights. But I mean, the thing I remember when I was 20, and it was New Year's, and saying to a couple of my friends at New Year's Eve, like, what's funny is we're without girlfriends or anything right now. By a decade from now, if we get together when we're 30 on New Year's Eve, we're all going to be married and we're all going to have children by now. And who knows what city we'll live in or anything else. none of those things were true for any of any of the people I was talking to. But it is weird to think what a trip life is. That, I mean, at 20, 25, you would never, you know where you're going to wind up? Los Angeles. Like, what? Los Angeles? I would never move across the country for any reason. There would be no reason I would take myself that far away. You know? What a crazy thing. You guys are you're Philadelphia's first couple.
Well,
and
I don't know about that part, but Philadelphia.
Who else would be?
I don't know. I mean,
Eric Lindros and his old lady.
I would never throw myself in.
All right, I'm throwing
on a hierarchy like that. I will say, however, as much as I love Philadelphia, living in Los Angeles, being by the ocean, seeing you and your smiling face, and coming on your wonderful podcast program here, life is good.
All right, listen, I don't need to be patronized. That's the end of it.
I meant that genuinely.
I may have to have you cut that out.
An hour and 45 minutes with on a rando weekday when I got all this basketball to write?
Listen, dozens of people are going to hear this, and it's going to pay off. You'll see.
I'll take it.
All right. Listen, the great John Gonzalez. Make sure you track down all his work at The Ringer, the podcast. Tell me it again. What's it?
Heat Check, the NBA show. Heat Check.
The name confuses me every time.
We have individual.
I enjoy it.
NBA. We have the NBA show umbrella, and then there are individual subsections.
Listen, you don't need my counsel and Simmons either. You guys are thriving over there. Mazel tov on that. More Hooey and Applesauce coming later in the week. Till then, thin slice of heaven.